Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. It's already Monday. It seems like the weekend just flies by. And then, of course, football season gets here, and then the weeks. It just seems like it takes forever to get back to the weekend because we're so excited to see the Bulldogs play again. But, yeah, I'm happy to kind of see things moving along a little bit. It's already August, and we've had some unseasonably cool weather the last few days. I don't know how long that's going to last, but it was cool to be out of football practice today. We're going to talk a little bit about some observations and some talk from hearing the players speak. I want to commend Brandon Langlois and everybody involved with Mississippi State Athletic Communications. 19 interviews last week. And we won't get that many this week, but we do have a very busy schedule in front of us. Media opportunities most days this week, including today, tomorrow, and then I think Thursday is the day off. We'll get Levy on Sunday after the scrimmage. But we're going to get players just about every media opportunity, even when practice is closed. But, so we're getting an opportunity to hear from your Bulldogs kind of about what's happening out there, what their expectations are. And listen, a lot of it becomes boilerplate stuff. It does. Okay, everybody's working hard. Everybody's doing well. We're making some progress. I like it when guys are very candid, and they have been. But we're going to talk a little bit about, a few things that we've learned. I know you guys are getting up to speed. It's 26 days, man. 26 days from now, we'll be kicking it off against Southern Miss, and should be an interesting day for sure as year two of the Jeff Levy administration kicks off. For those of you that are unaware, we're working on a musical project and talked about it on the show a couple times. Eric Luttrell, some of you know him, some of you do. Eric, a good Bulldog, but also, too, a very talented musician. Eric is partnering with me in this project, and my first interaction with Eric was as a fan. I had a chance to see him at W.C. Don's, I believe it was, and it was a band called Brouhaha, and he was the leader of the pack, and so he's working with us on this project. We have a couple of other, tentative yeses. Not ready to announce those names just yet. I will give you another one, Blake Dees. If those of you that don't know Blake, another good Bulldog. Blake played drums with an outfit called Blacktop Ridge. They cut an album here a couple years ago. So Blake's going to be a part of it. Eric's a part of it. And we'll have two or three more. We'll have a bass player and at least one more guitar player. There's about three guitar parts in this song. So we want to do the song justice. And as mentioned to you guys before, we're going to have a choir of people that have been impacted by the loss of a loved one due to suicide. And so great reaction so far to that. If you want to be a part of that, hit me up on socials and I'll let you know as we get a little bit closer. I can't promise you a personal invite, but I will post updates on my Facebook page. And of course, we'll talk about it here on the show. We'll get together at some point in a few weeks, kind of start roughing this track out. And, then we'll get together during one of the football open dates, and we'll have a good time together. And we'll video the recording of this, and we'll push it out to socials to promote the 988 suicide hotline. It's so interesting, too. I put on Facebook kind of what we were doing. I said, we're trying to promote awareness of the 988 number, and people are like, what is that? Well, that's exactly the reason you do it. And let me remind you at this time now, if you are considering harming yourself or others, dial 988 or call or text. If calling is not possible, you can text that number and you can get help. there's no need to live this way. And one of the things, I had a chance to speak to a young lady yesterday that will probably be leading and organizing the choir. And she is a choir director and also a person that has been impacted by the unexpected loss of loved ones due to all of this. And we spoke a little bit yesterday about how, you know, a lot of people in our generation are choosing to take this route, and it is so unfortunate. And the thing that I hear when I speak to people about this, whether they're contemplating this or it's a loved one of somebody who did, one of the things that pops up a lot is that perhaps life didn't turn out the way we hoped it would. That we've gotten so late in life, right? You know, we're like in our 50s or whatever, and you begin to think there's more life behind me than ahead of me, and I didn't accomplish what I wanted to do. Life has just become about paying the bills and paying the mortgage and raising kids or whatever. And it can be a little bit daunting. All of a sudden, the reality of where you are in your life cycle can be a bit depressing. And I can assure you that as someone who has dealt with the aftermath of these funerals and the totality of your absence, I can tell you, no matter what you're going through, the people that love you would rather help you figure it out than learn to live without you. There's so much of that that happens. People convince themselves that everybody they love would be better off without them. That is just simply not true. It's just not, you know. And I remember going down to a funeral in Quitman, Mississippi for a young man that I didn't know well. But somebody hit me up and said, you know what, you know, the dad's a big fan of yours, and it'd be great if you could go. And when I got all the details, I said, I have to go. And even move some other things around on a schedule to go. That's not to praise me, but to also just kind of maybe illustrate how important these things are. And I went down there, and I think the whole town turned out. You know, there's so many people out there that truly do love you, you know, even when you feel unlovable. And I'm so incredibly grateful that I did most of my troublemaking in the pre-social media, pre-smartphone days, because I can assure you there'd be some things out there that I'd probably be pretty ashamed about. We all go through that. But for young people today, there is a lot of accountability, and some of it is very negative. You know, some people use your mistake as an opportunity to kind of bully you. And I had someone share with me a story of a young man some time ago, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. I'm going to share it with you because I think it's important that you know. That there was a young man, a little bit socially awkward, kind of a gamer, didn't spend a lot of time out there, wasn't really maybe, you know, up to speed on the dating world. And there was this girl, a high school girl, that he absolutely had a huge crush on, And he professed his love to her. She rejected him. Some people found out about it. They went to social media. They began to belittle him for that. And guys, let me just tell you this. We all know, all of us, and maybe some women too, right? We don't exclude. But I can tell you, it is so difficult, man, when you're a young guy and there's a girl that you're just absolutely crazy about, and she might even be a little bit out of your league, and you finally muster up the courage to ask her out or to ask for a phone number. You know, I don't know what kids do today. That's a very hard thing to do, right? I mean, you do all this bargaining with yourself, and you think, man, you know, I got to go up and ask her. I at least owe it to myself to try, even if she says no. And I don't think a lot of people fully appreciate that. And I'm speaking mainly to you ladies, but I know there's a lot of guys that ask you out that you don't want to go out with. I understand that. You guys have a burden to carry in that respect that we don't appreciate. But for a good guy to make that step and to be rejected, it is so incredibly difficult. And it's part of life. It is. And eventually you get a little game, you know. I had to grow my hair out and play music, learn how to dance, all that good stuff, you know. But you get a little game and you know, you get some confidence. But when you don't have that, you know, when you get to be older, you know, you understand that there's plenty of fish in the sea, and it's become such a cliche that sometimes people don't fully appreciate that. It's just like the Pearl Jam song Black, right? I know that someday you're going to have a beautiful life and you'll be the sky, the star in somebody else's sky, but why can't it be mine, right? We've all felt that. That's why that song is so popular. Right? I mean, you watch the Pearl Jam shows and everybody sings along because everybody has commonality with that emotion. In this particular situation, this young man was rejected. and he was picked on, and he killed himself. Man, that makes me so emotional. I just want to take up all of these kids, man. I just want to hug them. And I want to tell them, it's not always going to be this way. It's not always going to be this way. And what happens, guys, just for those of you listening to the show that are in high school, I know we have some of you guys, about 30 days after high school graduation, you, and sometimes it's quicker than that, it might be 2 weeks, you begin to realize that all these people's opinions that mattered so much to you really don't matter. But when you're in that bubble, you get so caught up in all of it, and the last thing you want is to look bad or have somebody kind of pick on you or whatever. I get it. I understand it. But I can tell you, it won't always be that way forever. But this is a cause that's very important to me. It's important to Eric. And I'm so incredibly proud to be able to partner with him. And those of you that know him understand he is a very serious musician. He's recorded albums. Blake, of course, recorded albums. And so this is going to be a serious project. And your good friend and host has been rehearsing every single day. It takes a long time to kind of get back into shape when you haven't sung in a long time. And who knows, I might not do a good job. But you know what? I'm not going to worry about somebody picking on me. I can promise you that, because we're doing it for all the right reasons. But I look forward to the performance. I look forward to all of this. And, of course, I got some other people in my life who are like, hey, are you getting back in? Are you going to do more music again? I don't have time. Mississippi State has to come first. But I'd love to get together every now and again and jam. There's been some friends I've sat in with in recent years and just kind of got out there and sang background vocals or, you know, done Hunger Strike with my buddy Brian Jones. I mean, I do those things because I enjoy it. I enjoy it. And you know what? Sometimes other people enjoy it when I do it too. And there's some that don't. And you know what? It's okay. It's funny. I saw a thing yesterday, and we're going to get ready to kind of change gears here. But Ian Astbury from The Cult, who my youngest son is named after, saw an interview with him. There was this radio station in Chicago, I think he said it was. They were doing what was called the Blind Date Concert. And so you could buy your ticket to go to a blind date show not knowing who was playing. You have no clue who's playing. You just buy the ticket or you win a ticket and you go to the show. And so everybody's all excited. The you know, crowd's in a fever pitch. They're going to unveil the performer and The Cult comes out and 2/3 of the crowd leaves. You know, because some people were there to thinking it was going to be a top 40 act or it was going to be somebody rock radio friendly. You know, but the people that stayed had a great time. You know, they said, yeah, would you do it again? And he goes, no, I'd never do it again. But what an interesting concept for a concert. But at the end of the day, it's all about what's next. You know, there's so many people that are so afraid to put themselves out there to be judged, you know, and I think there's some cowardice involved in that, to be honest with you. And I used to be that person, you know, to be honest with you. I just kind of lay it out there for you. I was scared to try because I was scared to fail. You can't be scared to fail in life. You can't be. Whether you're writing books, whether you're doing shows, whether you're recording music, whether you're painting, whether you're doing something artistic with your life, or maybe just making your voice heard, you cannot be afraid to fail because that's how you learn. It's true. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We absolutely do, and they love us right back. Man, there are so many places in life where I go where I don't feel like I get my money's worth. There are very few that I go and say, you know what, I got more than I paid for. That's how I feel when I go to Bulldog Burger Company. I always feel that the experience exceeds the expectations. I know exactly what to expect there. I'm going to get great food at a great price, great service, and a great atmosphere. It's great. It is. There are so many other places that I go, and I have high expectations, and maybe not even great expectations, but sometimes the expectations are just kind of mediocre, and people don't even meet them, much less exceed them. I've never had a bad experience at Bulldog Burger Company. Part of that is because of the fact that I guess I've been there so many times that there is a standard of excellence that I have grown accustomed to. Absolutely correct. They do such a good job training their service staff there too. They're always on top of things. I hate to have to ask to have my drink refilled. I hate it. And when I waited tables, that was one of the things I always watched for. I never wanted an empty glass on a table. Ever. I never had that at Bulldog Burger Company. I'm so well taken care of there. You will be too. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. Find a burger that fits your needs. If you're new, get the Bulldog. Straight ahead, rock and roll, American hamburger. You can't go wrong getting the Bulldog. But if you want to branch out a little bit, maybe walk a little bit on the wild side, get that Pimentology, add bacon, perhaps get the freshman 15, the Bryant, the Lauren. You can get it how you want it. That's one of the best things I love about there. It's like, hey, can you do this? Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I don't want this cheese. I want this kind. You know, you can do whatever you want. And you can even get it without a bun, right? If you're, you know, kind of being a little bit carb conscious, you can take care of that too and get your hamburger patty dressed properly over a bed of lettuce. Check it out. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, a few things right out of the gate. We talked about a few things last week. I would say right now, the thing that I'm probably, we'll start on offense, okay? The size and length of this offensive line is so incredibly improved over what we saw in the spring. Now, we had some guys in the spring that worked hard. They did. And you got some of those guys that are back. Well, today I paid a little special attention to the line, you know, watching them. It's amazing how they transform the bodies of these guys. Okay, I want to start with Luke Work, okay? Luke Work looks great. Now, Luke last year was kind of thrust into service as a true freshman because we had to have him. And I'll be honest with you, Luke didn't look great last year from a physical standpoint. Still had a little baby fat, right? You see him now, looks completely different. And I even told Jacob Bain, of course, Jacob Bain rides for us, and Jacob, of course, was a standout offensive lineman when he was in high school. And I didn't play offensive line. All right, so I trust his judgment. I said, you know, it looks like Luke's trimmed up a little bit. And he goes, yeah, I know, it'd probably be a little bit quicker. You know, it'd be interesting to see how he performs at a new playing weight. And I don't know that he's lightened up more so than he's tightened up, if that makes sense, right? After a full year in the weight room, he looks to be a different player. And we don't get to watch team stuff, but just the way that he moves around looks good. You know, Jacoby Jackson's a guy that's constantly on special teams, and he's played some, of course, as an offensive guard. Jacoby looks good. He does. You know, and kind of working through there. I mean, Jimothy Lewis, of course, got to play a little bit last year. Jimothy's one of those guys, too, that big-time player. We had to fight to keep him out of the portal back in December. Got everything resolved. But those guys are returners, and we feel good about them. Cannon Boone's a guy that's back to good health. You know, I mean, I'll be careful with him as we get into it. But, you know, the returners, see, you know, you've got more of a point of contrast because we knew what we saw last year. But the new strength and conditioning staff has really done a good job getting these guys into a position where they look like a true SEC offensive line. Now, how they work together as a cohesive unit remains to be seen. But from an individual standpoint, they look good. And then you add in these new players, right? Zach Owens, not quite as big as I thought he would be, but looks good. You know, didn't play a whole lot at Colorado, but that's a guy that Phil Loadholt knows and likes, obviously, or he wouldn't have signed him again. But you begin to kind of work through that aspect of it. When you look at the number of bodies and the number of bodies that look like SEC players as opposed to walk-ons, you're going to be impressed. You're going to be impressed. And you should be. And again, Phil Loadholt's I think Phil's probably a class away. I mean, he put his fingerprints on this thing as best he could, you know, mainly in the spring portal, right? But now that you've got a full year to work with, again, you see the players that he has been able to secure commitments from. You can see it's not a lot of guys that look like me playing offensive line. It's a lot more guys that look like him playing offensive line. And that's a great thing. Defensively, we've talked extensively.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the long-lasting power you need with Energizer. Menards has the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries. They provide solid power for flashlights, remotes, and so much more. Right now, save big on Energizer batteries. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
about the D-line and the transformation there. I'm not going to talk about that. The group, the position group that really kind of jumps out to me is the linebacker room. Now remember, you know, Stone Blanton, of course, had a great year for us last year. We wish he'd been here the whole time. He had a great year for us last year, and he had to, right? He had to have a great year because he wasn't getting a lot of support up front. But when I look back in hindsight and I think about kind of what we had last year, we did not have a lot to work with. That's one of the reasons Stone played so many snaps. Other than his talent that was evident, we just didn't have a lot of depth. When you look at this group now, and it'll be we haven't seen them, you know, when the lights are on yet, but there appears to be much more to work with within that group. Now, of course, you went out and added some guys, but there's some other guys, of course, you know, and it's so interesting, like, I don't know where this got out about the whole thing about Isaac Smith kind of moving a linebacker. He's a box safety. He lined up as a linebacker a lot last year, you know. So it's not new to him in that respect. And when you've got a guy like him that is as productive and prolific as he is around the football, you want him in the box. You want playmakers around the ball so they can make plays. But Zachary Tillman, and I talked about him earlier today on another show. Nobody's talking about him. But I suspect probably 3 weeks into the season, everybody's going to be talking about him. And you saw it last year. Like, when they finally put him on the field, you couldn't get him off. Because every time you turn around, he's making a play. He's pressuring a quarterback. He's getting a sack of Jackson Dart. He's blocking a punt at Texas. You know, he's out there in Georgia making plays in space. And, again, this is a guy that's only played linebacker, you know, really a couple of years. You know, he outgrew the safety position in high school and had to move down into the box and play at the linebacker spot. And so then he had to kind of get up to speed. And people remember, like, Zachary got mentioned a lot by Zach Arnett as a young guy to watch. And then again, you get him out there last year. And I think in some ways he is kind of a forgotten player in the conversation because people focus so much on what's coming in rather than what's coming back. But don't be surprised you look up middle of the year and Zachary Tillman's one of the most prolific tackers on the team, if not the conference. The guy just finds the football. He's a gamer. He is. I don't know what kind of practice player he is, but I know when the lights come on, there's a different gear with him. He's one of those guys that has a switch you can just flip, and he can go get it done. So that's a group right now that I feel really good about. Just, you know, really thinking about from a depth point of view. You know, it's not like, yeah, we had a 2-deep chart last year, right? I mean, Nick Mitchell, of course, a career special teams guy, kind of thrust into the mix there. And I suspect Nick may end up being a 2-deeper this year. Rather than a starter, because I think that there is enough competition here where you can get enough reps to keep guys fresh, but also, too, I think in some respects we've just upgraded the talent to a point that we feel pretty good about running two sets of backers out there and maybe even, you know, splitting up the reps a little more regularly to keep guys fresh later in ball games. I don't know that there's a linebacker room in the country that got beat up worse than ours did. And what I mean by that is they're having to constantly fend off guards. Because you just simply couldn't get any push or fit a gap in the middle. And people just lined up and, you know, ran into A gap and B gap, and Stone Blanton and those guys just had to jump in there. You know, it's just part of the deal. I think this year, you know, the front half of this defense is going to play remarkably better just because of the fact you've got more size up front, you've got more talent up front, you've got more depth up front, and then at the linebacker room, you've got some guys that can really run and fit gaps. And so I'm very eager to see what this defense looks like on the field against Southern Miss. And as we mentioned last week, you know, everybody benefits from having a better pass rush. We're going to turn the backers loose, you know, a little bit. There were times last year, you know, we just couldn't quite get there just because of the fact we got no push up front. But I really believe this linebacker room is going to be one of these things we look back and say, you know what, we did a pretty good job there. We did a good job there. And, again, I think the addition of Vincent Dancy is very important too. You know, this is a guy, again, you look at what he did at Colorado. You know, they were one of the top teams in the country last year in TFLs. And a lot of that came from Vincent Dancy's group. And so you begin to kind of work through this thing with Vincent and his career. You know, former head coach, obviously, at Valley. And this is a guy that knows how to run the whole show. But you can tell this is a scenario that he has really embraced. And that's the thing, too, when I begin to think about next year, right? I think Jeff Lebby's decisions are going to be a lot easier because I think he's got some people in place, right? I mean, so many of you have kind of complained, you know, and rightfully so, mind you, about defensive line play, about total defensive play. You know, when you bring Mike McIntyre in, a guy that's a former head coach, you bring Paul Rhodes in, former head coach, and those guys are working as consultants, QC guys. You know, in the event that you have to make a change, well, you've already got some candidates here. If you decide that you want to turn everything over to Vincent Dancy on the defensive line, you can do that. You have Dave Turner plans to retire, which I don't know that. You know, I don't know what DT's long-term plans are. But at some point, he's going to retire. And so when you begin to kind of work that aspect of it and begin to think about that, that in the event we have to make a change on defense, you've already got some people here that are learning your culture, your roster, and your system that would have the ability to come in and not have to have the steep learning curve, if that makes sense to you. So again, those decisions made in the offseason should make us a better football team this year, but also could potentially kind of narrow the pool of candidates down if we have to make a change on the defensive side of the football. That's something that, you know, we talk about playing, you know, chess, not checkers. That's part of the deal. You bring people in, kind of the Nick Saban model, right? He brought in a lot of these former head coaches, and people kind of joked about it. It was the Nick Saban rehabilitation program. And so you bring these guys in, then all of a sudden your offensive coordinator gets a job elsewhere as a head coach where you just plug in the QC guy to be your new OC. There's a lot of that that happened. And so you're only as good as your weakest link. And when you've got two former head coaches in Paul Rhodes and Mike McIntyre working as QC analyst on your defense, you're only going to get better. But I think it makes everybody around you better too, you know, because McIntyre is a guy that's run the whole show. Rhodes is a guy that's run the whole show. So, again, these offseason moves, I think there is a bigger plan in place, but also a bit of an insurance policy for all involved. And, again, I think at the end of the day, we're just going to be better on defense. And if you're better on defense, you're going to give more opportunities for your offense. This weekend I watched Mississippi State versus Texas A&M, Mississippi State versus Arizona State, Mississippi State versus Ole Miss. I watched it all because I was writing a column about fourth quarters and how we struggled to finish in fourth quarters. And a lot of that's just exhaustion. A lot of that is just absolutely just the defense wearing down. Do you know how many offensive possessions we had in the fourth quarter of the Egg Bowl? Do you know this? Zero. Wrong. One. We had one. Yeah, that's it. Ole Miss goes down and scores to take the two-point possession lead, and then we couldn't do anything with it. Give the football back. They run the clock out. You go to Arizona State, right? Remember that? Remember that game, how great it was? No, it wasn't great. Wasn't great, Steve. Wasn't great at all. It wasn't. And we kind of, you know, romanced it a little bit. But, you know, Kevin Coleman makes that, you know, that catch and run to make it a one-score game, and it was almost 6 minutes to go in the game. We never got the football back. They threw one incomplete pass and then ran eight consecutive times, got inside the red zone and took three knees and ended the ball game because we simply couldn't stop them. And a lot of that's personnel. Some of that, I'm sure, is schematic stuff. We couldn't get off the field. No matter whose fault it was, we couldn't get off the field. And so we've got to find a way to get stops, especially later in ball games, to give ourselves a chance to win. And I think that's what the improved depth, the defensive line and linebacker are going to do for you. I just don't think we're going to wear down as quickly as we did last year. And that's a great thing. But today we had we had Brennan Thompson, who I think you're going to like a lot. Those of you that like Kevin Coleman, I think he's got a similar skill set. Albert Reese was back, and Albert's a guy that says, I can play guard, I can play tackle, I can play wherever they need me. They're making a difference to me. Albert, not necessarily the most talkative guy. You can watch his videos for free over at jeanspage.com. Read those stories for free, too. But Albert is a guy that won the Hull Award last year and probably surprised a lot of people when he did. But he won the Hull Award, and this guy's a pro prospect. It's a guy that Mason Miller, you know, beat Ole Miss head-to-head for, got him to flip to Mississippi State instead of going to Oxford. But that guy has fit in and done a good job for us. He missed the spring. He's back to full speed and good to go. But, he spoke today, too. And, you know, that's a big piece of the puzzle on offensive line. And then you get Kedrick Bingley-Jones, a guy that we signed that, you know, he had some expectations. We were expecting him to come in here and be a guy that could at least, you know, give us maybe 35, 40 snaps a game. And then he gets hurt, has to go the redshirt route because of the injury. And now he's back. Now he's a father. And he says that, you know, he's ready to go. He's motivated. He's got obligations. Very well-spoken young man. And glad to have him back. And that's, again, the thing you go back to in hindsight. We talk about, you know, how did things get to be so bad on the defensive line last year? Well, again, you go back and think about Calvin Dinkins. You lose him to injury in game number one for the second straight year. Eric Taylor dismissed from the team. It's all part of the deal. Kedrick Bingley-Jones gets hurt, out for the season. You know, number one, you didn't have a lot of depth to begin with, which is why you went and signed Corey Clark after a good camp showing in June just to give you some depth, and then you end up having to start him because of all the injuries. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say we had a bunch of wall bangers on the defensive front, but the two deep was essentially decimated due to injuries and dismissals. And so now here we are. And last year, I mean, you look back in hindsight, and I've got some other people that kind of look back and chuckle. I'm not ready to do that. I'm not ready to look back and say, man, can you believe that? When I say that, I don't laugh. I mean, it's just almost like a sigh of exasperation. I'm like, did we really have to do that? We did. And as I mentioned before, I mean, we had Kyle McClendon and Corey Clark starting in a game side by side in the Southeastern Conference. And that's not a shot at those guys. It's just not fair. But it goes to show you the situation that we're in. So with the improved depth, with the improved experience, and the improved talent level, everybody on defense should benefit from that. But again, the linebackers benefit the most because I think you're going to have them have the opportunity to kind of break clear and not have to fight through offensive linemen to go make a tackle. You know, everybody's job will be better in that respect. But that linebacker room is just one of those things that I'm watching kind of intently this camp, and I am impressed with the look and the athleticism of that group, and I think you guys will be as well. Time for our close with Blair, player of the day. We're going to go with Albert Reese, a guy that had to kind of watch from the sidelines as he recovered from surgery back through in the spring. He's going to be a big part of things for us. Albert Reese, a big-time player, as you guys know, and you know, going to be a big part of what we need on that offensive line. We're going to need his expertise and his talent to help move this thing forward. Blair Chandler at closetheblair.com. Phone number 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Visit the website closetheblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Had dinner with Blair last week. He's doing great. Working through some condo stuff here in the greater Starkville area. Yeah, he has a place here. Yeah, and you could have a place here too. Maybe you've wanted that game day condo, but perhaps that room has eluded you. But perhaps you're in renting mode right now and you want to plant some roots somewhere. Maybe life's throwing you a curveball. Rather than overthink it, right, and have to go through and get on Facebook and ask for recommendations, and that, you know, that can always be just a disaster. Stick with the winners. Stick with Blair Chandler. Get his 24 years of expertise working for you, whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home. And again, that game day condo could be yours. Blair Chandler can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. Be sure and hit him up today on his personal cell. During our discussions today, as we awaited football media availability, we get observation, and then we kind of go upstairs and kind of wait until it's time to interview players. Mike Nemeth, our friend Nemo, who ran the show for so many years at Mississippi State, not much happened without Mike Nemeth's fingerprints being on it. You know, there's some truth in that. I joke all the time. I kind of embellish his role, and I tell these younger guys that, you know, when Mississippi State hired Jackie Sherrill and Mississippi State, you know, went to the Final Four in basketball, that Mike Nemeth was involved in all of those things. But I have fun with that. Mike does too. I think he enjoys kind of being the butt of my joke, but Mike's a good dude. But Mike was telling me, you know, hey, I've done some music research, and he brought up a name that I wasn't quite as familiar with until I put on some of the tracks. It's Meridian, Mississippi's own Steve Forbert, or Forbear, depending on what part of the country you're from. I don't know if you know much about Steve, but Steve is an incredibly accomplished musician. 70 years young, still out making music. He was playing Americana music before they had a label for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he did some stuff that was kind of rocky and some things that were kind of country and some things that were very folky. He was once named, like, the new Bob Dylan. He had a quote about that, too. This is, Steve says, you can't pay any attention to that. It was just a cliche back then. It's nothing I take seriously. I'm off the hook. I don't have to be smarter than everybody else and know all the answers like Bob Dylan. End of quote. So interesting. But Steve has had an incredible career. 21 studio albums, 3 live albums, and he's had a ton of stuff covered by other artists, which I think that's one of those things that's the true mark of an amazing songwriter, is when somebody loves your song enough to cover that song, to put their own time, effort, and energy into covering your song, to have their own version. There actually is a compilation album, and some of that is going to be on our top 10 list. Some of these songs, but they were performed by Steve. But the American Troubadour, I think, was the name of the song, the album. And they took like 21 of Steve's songs, and people covered them. And you may enjoy that. And our buddy Keith Urban even covered one of Steve Forbert's songs. So here we go. Our top 10 Steve Forbert list. One of the things, too, it's interesting. You know, we talk so much about Mississippi's music on this show. We've done so many top 10s about Mississippi artists. We've never featured Steve. So as a result, we're going to write that wrong and give Steve his own top 10 list. And some of you know Steve, and be sure and let him know we appreciate him. We do. Yeah, absolutely we do. He's played all over the world, man. It's incredible. Number 10, a track called Get Well Soon. I think you'll enjoy that one. Number 9 is an interesting one, too. It's a lead song on the Greatest Hits album. It's called What Kind of Guy. And it's a very Southern song. You know, basically, you know, what kind of guy I am. Trying to find out what kind of person I am. What I'm about, what are my values, and it's a deeply Southern track. I think you'll enjoy that. Number 8, I like the horns here. Like, there's some songs out there that people want to add horns to, and the horns just kind of distract from the song where they don't fit. Well, they fit here, and the track is Ya Ya next to me, but the horns, I think, kind of make the song. There are a lot of other ones out there that, not necessarily Steve songs, but there's some other songs out there that the horns are a distraction. On this track, I think the horns let the song breathe. Number 7, this has kind of got a honky-tonk feel to it. It kind of feels a little bit like the transitional Rolling Stones period to me, a little bit. It's You Cannot Win If You Do Not Play. And there's some truth in that. But this is kind of a good time and song. Kind of got a little bit of a honky-tonk vibe to it. A little more up-tempo. I think you'll deal with that. Number 6, I'm In Love With You. Beautiful track. And there's a lot of character in the voice of Steve Forbert. I mean, it really is. There's a lot of character in his voice. He doesn't really sound like other people. But it's not in a way that it's an acquired taste. You know, I think it's also kind of inspirational because he's not a guy that's got a huge range. But he has a real character to his voice that kind of illustrates his point. And on this song, I think that's evident. Number 5, it's The Sweet Love You Give. This is an interesting track, too. And again, great, great, great horns on this one. And the subtitle is Sure Goes a Long, Long Way. The Sweet Love You Give Sure Goes a Long, Long Way. And all of us have a desire to be loved or, you know, desired to feel attractive, to feel important to people. You know, as we get older, the more that stuff really matters. You want to feel like if you're providing a value to somebody else's life, really to kind of reciprocate to the people that make a difference in your life. At least that's how it is for me. The people that I love one of my jobs each and every day, and I don't always fulfill those obligations, right? I'm human. Some days I just can't get to everything. But I want to make the people that I love, I want to make their lives easier. And sometimes that's a text just saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. You got a big exam today or a big presentation. Or, you know, I called my buddy Chad Jones over the weekend. I was on my way back from down in the 601, and I called my buddy Chad. You know, Chad had a couple little scares here lately, and everything's fine. Chad's good if you know Chad. But I called Chad, and I'm like, hey, brother, I love you, man. I just want to make sure you're doing good. And you know how it goes, man. Like, something's going on, and you don't want to overstep, right? You don't want to be nosy. And there's that fine line between being nosy and showing you care. And sometimes I struggle with that. Like, I don't ever want the details. Like, hey, I don't know what's going on. Don't need to know. Just want to let you know that I love you, and I'm pulling for you, you know? And, you know, the older I get, the more that stuff matters to me. You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, something we had happen, a tragedy within the Columbia High School Wildcat family some time ago. And I think I told you guys about Chris. And one of Chris's best friends was a guy named Clay Pittman, who was for a short time in a band with me. And Clay was one of my heroes growing up. Like, I wanted to be Clay. I did. And so after Chris passed away, I called Clay, and I'm like, hey, I just want to tell you, man, one of the biggest honors in my life is being able to say that we were in a band together. You're such a talented guy, and I love you, and I'm just thinking about you, man. And he goes, man, well, thanks for saying that. And I thought to myself, why have I waited so long to say those things? You know what I mean? Like, there are so many people that have made such a difference in my life, and they don't even really know it. So why not give them their flowers so they can enjoy that, especially at times like these, man? You know, when we're getting all beaten up by life, you know, sometimes you wonder if you matter. You know what I mean? It's like so many things happen and you begin to think, man, you know, and trust me, there are so many times, man, I feel like I'm aging out. And I don't mean from the sports world. I mean, just like, you know, the world has changed so much, and it's like so much of this doesn't make sense to me. And I'm like, you know, this is what happens. When you get older and you get later in life, you begin to think, you know, you want to live in this bubble, you know. I don't want to have to deal with any of that stuff, so I'm just going to, like, stick to my little group. And that's just not healthy, I don't think, either. Number four. Really like this one. I like the tempo on this one a lot. It's called Thinking. And it's one of those songs, too, that I think is kind of the forerunner of the Americana music genre. I think when you listen to this, you're gonna say, you know what, this sounds so much like the other stuff that I've heard from this genre in recent years. And I think a lot of it kind of dates back to Steve. Number three, It Isn't Gonna Be That Way. That was a song that a few other people have covered, but it's one of those things too. I think you kind of put your you know, you put your foot in the ground, you start handing out haymakers, right? I mean, there's so many things in life we actually don't have to accept. There are some things that we struggle with that we should accept. That's one of those things in recovery. Everybody knows the serenity prayer, and I've probably said that a million times in my life, right? You know, and the biggest part of that, right, is, you know, the wisdom to know the difference. Give me the courage to change the things I can, you know, and then you begin to work through that, you know, having the courage to make meaningful change in your life and to accept those things I cannot change. And that's difficult too, right? How do I get to the point where I realize this is something that I can't change, I just simply got to live with? And then the wisdom to know the difference. That's the punchline in the whole thing. That's what makes the whole thing work. Because I see so much of this today. I see so many people like banging their heads against a brick wall for nothing. For nothing. Now, I can't sit here and tell you what other people are passionate about and what their causes are, you know, if they're meaningful or not. They're meaningful to them, but I think you got to pick your battles. I mean, there's so many things out there that we're exerting so much energy into that we're simply never going to be able to change. And people convince you, we just got to keep working harder. One more hashtag might do it. And let me just tell you this, no, it won't. No, it won't. You know, there's so much of that in life that we waste so much time tilting against windmills, and then nothing changes. And I think that's what maturity eventually teaches you, is to pick your battles. And listen, there have been some things in my life that I said, I know these things are wrong, and I know that we can change them. And I have put so much time, effort, and energy into them and not gotten the result. And there have been some other causes that I've just kind of passed the baton to somebody else. And they've been able to kind of finish the the deal, you know? And there are some other things, you know, that just like, hey, I know this is wrong and we're going to continue to fight until we get it fixed. But sometimes there are things that you can, you know, you're not going to beat City Hall with. Unless you want to go run for office. Yeah, different story, right? Number two, and this is a song, too, that Dave Murray and I talked about this, too. And I think a lot of this is kind of about Masonite. The track is called Going Down to Laurel, and it talks about how it's a nasty town, right? Now, all due respect to all the people who live in Laurel. I got a lot of people in Jones County. I'm not in any way being critical, but apparently Steve was. You know, maybe Steve had a girl that broke his heart in Laurel. I don't know. You know, maybe he jumped down there on 45 and got to 59. And, you know, I don't even know if 59 was around back then. But, you know, either way, there's a track called Going Down to Laurel. And if you're not from Laurel, you probably don't know the track. But it's worthy of a listen. But number one, a song that went to number 11 on the Billboard charts. And you know it when you hear it. Super cool thing. And the piano part was played by Elvis Presley's primary piano player. Did you know that? And when you put this song on, you'd be like, I remember this song. I remember it. And a lot of people have covered it. But Bobby Ogden, well-known Nashville session player, who was an Elvis Presley guy for many years. But this was a big song. It was, and it charted internationally. We used to have the Cashbox stuff, then we had Billboard. There was a lot of things out there, but this is the song that Keith Urban covered as well. Some other people did, but it's off Nemperor Records, of course, that eventually became part of Mercury. But that's off the Jackrabbit Slim album, released way back in 1979. Be sure and check it out. Again, Romeo's Tune, very interesting track, and again, written by Mississippi's own Steve Forbert. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit us up on X. You can find Roy Samanti, my friend, who recently celebrated a birthday. Happy birthday to Roy Samanti. I'm not going to sing for you. You can sing for yourself. Have your wife sing. Have Elsa sing. I don't know, but I'm not singing for you. I love you, but I'm not singing. Not for you. But Roy celebrated a birthday, so happy birthday to Roy. And be sure and tweet at him and let him know that you wish him a happy birthday. I guess he was born in 67, so what does that make him, 58 this year? Yeah, 58. Almost Social Security time, Roy. Almost. Almost. I know he's probably got that ARRP discount thing, you know, the Senior Citizens Discount Card. I guarantee you he's got that. I guarantee he does. He may not allow his ego, may not let him use it. But I can promise you, when I get to get that discount card, I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it. I will accept the fact that I am getting older. Maybe you already have those cards. Maybe you get those extra discounts, like when you book hotel rooms, and maybe I can use that stuff too. But Roy is a lot closer to that than I am. You can find me on all forms of social media, at Scout Steve R. Roy, our friend, the birthday boy, at Dogmatic67, that's DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we absolutely love Campus Bookmart. And why? Because they have the things we want. More Mississippi State merch. We can never get enough of Mississippi State merchandise, whether it's clothing, whether it's decorative items, whether it's the things you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Miss Kathy Brown just does an amazing job. She's a bulldog through and through. So she outfits that store in the items that she would like to have as a fan of Mississippi State. Buy your bulldog wares from bulldog people. And you can do that at Campus Bookmart. Now, next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. I always get the celebratory hug. Maybe it's just the customer service that I expect, but maybe you get that too. And if you don't take it personal, right? It's a progressive society. But all that understood, if you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is not a good shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. Use promo code BSR and save shipping on all orders over $75. You know you need some new gear before the Bulldogs take the field. Don't delay, okay? Don't do it. You want to see some smiles on the fam? Just get them that unexpected Mississippi State clothing item. You will. Get them a little something for their room, their office, you know, maybe something for the pet. You know, you can knock it all out at campusbookmart.net. Got a message earlier today. I didn't ask for permission, but Christopher Gray is a longtime listener of the show. And we appreciate Chris and his support. But Chris, I'm going to give his wife credit here too. Let's just take a look here. Let me take a look here at Chris's Facebook profile page. You know, I'm a social media ninja, you know. And Chris, thank you so much for your service to our great nation. Chris works United States Air Force, and we need more people like that. But looking here to see, you know, if Chris's wife is pictured, which there's an epidemic of that in our country these days, but her name is not listed, so we won't give her credit. However, Mrs. Christopher Gray, I know we're not supposed to use that nomenclature these days because everybody's gotten to be so dadgum sensitive, but he says, "Hey, Steve, I love listening to the Boneyard when I'm in the car driving around running errands or whatever we're doing. I want you to know that my wife referred to your show as Daddy's Talking Thing to my kids yesterday. I just thought it was hilarious. They all wanted me to turn on some music." Well, Chris, I appreciate the fact that Daddy's Talking Thing won out over some music. Even though we do talk some music on the show, it's a good compromise. But yeah, Chris, thanks for your support. Thanks for listening to the show. And again, thanks so much for your service. Again, our military families mean so much to me. It's a job I didn't want to do. And it's a job we often take for granted. We really do. And I just wanted to say thanks. And, you know, Chris wasn't expecting this to happen. And so now, Chris, you win in the debate with you and the bride about Daddy's Talking Thing, because you can say not only does Daddy enjoy Daddy's Talking Thing, Daddy got a shout out on Daddy's Talking Thing. So there you go. You guys will have a good time with that, and wish your lovely bride the best from all of us here at the Boneyard. So, yeah, done some reconnaissance here as of late, talked to some people, get you guys some intel. A couple things that I wanted to say. Even though Garrick Frey and Noah Sullivan never made like the public declaration, the whole run it back, social media posting, they're back. And there was a lot of people that were a little bit concerned, right? As we got into the draft, they didn't get drafted. We were worried about them signing undrafted free agents. Well, that's where kind of NIL and rev share come in, you know, because you can be somewhat competitive on that aspect of things. And there's always going to be some guys that are just kind of ready to begin their pro career. Some guys get tired of going to school. You know, that it's true. I mean, you go to school for 12 years and you get up here and all of a sudden, you know, you're taking 300 and 400 level classes. In addition to that, all the demands of being a student athlete, it can be daunting. And sometimes you just get sick of it. It's like, man, I'm just so sick and tired of having to go to study hall or having to do all these labs and things like that. I get it. It's a necessary evil if you want a college degree. But some people just are like, you know what, I'm done going to school. We didn't have any of that, thankfully. But yeah, those guys are officially back. Also, Jacob Parker, remember him? You know, JoJo's twin brother. You know, JoJo signed for millions with the Blue Jays. Jacob elected to come to school, turned down second-round money. He was on campus just here recently, and guys will start filtering in. School doesn't start until the 20th, but most everybody is here, even if they're not in class, right? There's a few other guys that are kind of finishing up their summer ball assignments, and then they'll spend some time with family. But everybody will be reporting here within the next couple of weeks. But, you know, I share that with you because, again, you know, unless something crazy happens, you know, we're done in the portal. Now, the designated student athlete one-time portal, summer portal, closes tomorrow. And so far, we have not found much value in the DSA portal, right? Now, you never know who may go in late, right? Let's just say, for an example, let's say Justin Parker, when he was in South Carolina, recruited somebody and maybe didn't get him, and they sign with another school, and maybe they go into the portal at the last second, and it's a guy he has a relationship with, or perhaps a player that he feels like could help us. Well, then you may see something materialize. But from a position standpoint, we're in a much different scenario. We really don't need any more position players. And that's one of the things that we debate a lot over at Gene's Page is, how are we going to fill out the outfield? Because you probably got six dudes. you know, that you look at and say, those guys are worthy of starting. So how do you flesh it out? Well, that's what fall ball's for. You know, competition makes everybody better. And you begin to kind of work through this thing and you realize we are going to be absolutely loaded from a position point standpoint. Offensively, we have the opportunity to be one of the better teams in the country offensively. And for, remember last year, we set a school record in home runs. This lineup may have more length than that one did. And that's something that can be kind of scary. We got to grow up pretty quick on the mound. You know, we're going to need, Charlie Foster and Ryan McPherson and those guys to be really, really good for us. And a conversation that I had, too, with somebody with knowledge of the process about sometimes we get really, you know, fired up about pitchers like in the Cape. You know, the thing about that is the Cape can kind of fool you a little bit, right? Because they're swinging wooden bats. And there are some mistakes as a pitcher you can get away with a wooden bat that you can't with an aluminum bat. Right. And a lot of that's just little duck snorts. Right. I mean, you may get a guy completely. You may get him to just give you soft contact with a wooden bat. But because of the way aluminum bats are constructed, rather than that ball being a little soft liner to your second baseman, it's a little duck snort that gets out there in the right center. And so that's part of it. And so I just mentioned that not in any way to diminish the performance of anybody in the Cape from a pitching standpoint, but to understand throwing to a wooden bat is much different than throwing to an aluminum bat. It's a lot more forgiving when you make a mistake with a wooden bat, you know. And I tell you, interesting too, you know, the one guy that I look back and think maybe we should have made more of an effort to keep is Michael O'Brien. This guy is absolutely killing it for the Keene Swamp Bats. He had a walk-off home run in the playoffs the other night, and I think he's got 5 or 6 home runs this year. I think that's right, this summer. And Mike is kind of finding it and traded some texts with his dad the other day, and he'll be headed to Arkansas, Little Rock. I don't know if he stays there. I mean, I think he has a chance to, get number one, play every day there, but also, too, he may prove after a year to be a guy that goes back in the portal and lands somewhere else, because I think Mike has finally kind of found it. Kind of, and really, I think with Mike, I've said all along, he just needed ABs. And if he had not gotten injured just before the season this year, I think he's probably your starting center fielder. I think Bryce probably starts in left. And that's part of the discussion. Hey, what do we do with Bryce? You know, Bryce has been one of our more consistent hitters the last couple of years. Not really a power guy, but a guy that gets caught doing the right thing a lot. You know, just taking the ball the other way, working backside, just putting the ball in play somewhere, giving you a chance to score. And I don't know if there's anybody on the team that I want up there more than Bryce Chance with 2 outs and runners on. Because Bryce is going to find a way to put the ball in play. Doesn't always work out, but it gives you a competitive at-bat. And so you begin to kind of work through that aspect of it. Like Reed Stallman. Is Reed the first baseman? Could he be? Does Noah Sullivan get some reps over at first? I don't know, you know. Because that's one of the things, too, you think about. You're kind of, if Noah's your everyday DH, and he's really good against lefties, don't get me wrong, but if he's your everyday DH, it kind of locks up that DH spot. If you can find a spot for him defensively, and I think he's somewhat limited defensive position-wise, maybe he can play first some days, gives you the opportunity to have a left-handed DH against a right-hander. You know, positional flex is very important in baseball. But you start thinking about Blake Bevis. You know, where does he fit? Is he a left fielder? Is he a first baseman? Vitas? Where does he factor in? You know, he's played left field at Illinois. Is he a left fielder? Is he a first baseman? And so you begin to kind of work through this, and you begin to realize we have more players with starting potential than we have starting positions. And for Mississippi State baseball, that's a really good thing. You know, for the player that's maybe not playing every day, maybe not so much. I mean, you went there to compete and to play for something big. And you may not get that opportunity, you know. And that's the thing, too. At some point, we all kind of reach the Peter principle. Maybe you're familiar with that. You know, at some point, everybody rises to their own level of incompetence. And you find out, you know, hey, I'm good enough to play at this G5 school, so I'm going to go play in the SEC. And you get there and you find out, you know what, maybe I'm a fringe guy. Maybe I'm a fringe SEC guy. Maybe I'm not Ace Reese, you know. And those are things to consider, too. You know, Ace is a guy that played some left field this summer, you know, and you know, we'll see. He wants to play third base, and he's a guy, too, that our developmental piece defensively is going to be big for him. And people forget Ace played basically the last 6 to 8 weeks of the season with a bum foot, you know. And it's the plant foot pushing back toward the line, you know. So a lot of people have opinions but not knowing all the facts. There's a lot of that that happens in life. Of course, when you go on the road, you get a chance to talk to people. Not in a press conference setting, and a lot of times you can kind of get some information that that answers a lot of those questions. But, you know, when I begin to kind of work through this thing, I'm very excited about baseball. And everywhere I go in town, you know, this is how it's kind of portrayed to me. Well, Steve, how are we going to be in football? Because people are unsure. And then they're like, man, I just wish we could play baseball this weekend. And I do too. But the reality of it is we've got a lot of work to do between now and February 13th. A lot of work to do. You got about 6 months in there. We got a bunch we got to do to bring this team together, to build some team bonds. You know, we got to figure out this pitching thing. What's the bullpen roles look like? That's the one thing I think is probably the biggest question mark about this team is how, you know, I feel pretty good about who we expect to be the weekend starters. And I think there's probably a half dozen guys that factor in there. So we'll find, I think, three really good guys. And probably have a consistent midweek guy on top of that. But how do we piece this thing together? How do we bridge from the start to the close? You know, and that's where I think guys like Tyler Pitzer kind of factor in. Tyler, of course, wants to come in here and compete for a weekend starting position. He said that's always been the goal. But he's willing to do whatever. You know, he could be your first guy out of the pen. And so that's interesting. But I think, you know, Parker and O'Connor both have pitching pedigrees. We will be good when it comes to pitching. And, again, I think there are more pieces to work with this year compared to last year. Maybe not as much as we had in 2024, but certainly a lot of options. And that's why you go so deep in the portal, right? You go so deep in the portal to kind of figure this thing out. Because you never know when somebody might lose it, you know, when somebody gets some soreness. You know, that's part of it. I think we'd all agree. And here's an interesting fact that I don't know that you guys know. You know, we talk about the ACC being the second best baseball conference. Now, for years and years and years, you know, the Pac-10, you know, out there with USC and UCLA, those schools did. I bet you don't know this. I didn't. Somebody reminded me of this today. Do you know how many national championships that the ACC has in college baseball? I'll give you a second to think about it. You know one for sure. It may take you a second to kind of, you know, work your way back. But Virginia in 2015, right? Brian O'Connor won the national championship for Virginia. There's only been one other ACC baseball championship. That was in 1955. Wake Forest won it, and they were a great team. And that's the only time that a head coach did not return the year after a national championship. There's never been a coach fired the year after a national championship. The coach at Wake Forest in 1955, they had a rainout in Omaha and had to play on Sunday, and they came back, and rather than have a celebration, they had a protest. Because people were so upset because Wake Forest is a Baptist school that they played baseball on a Sunday. It's kind of crazy to think about that in hindsight. But you know, back in those days, that's post-World War II, and there was you know, big spiritual movement within the country. And as a religious school, they had a policy that they didn't play on Sundays. Well, they had a rainout. They didn't have any choice in the matter. They had to play on Sunday. They play, win the national championship. And while the administration backed them, the fans were absolutely relentless when it came to that. That's pretty interesting, right? But again, think about that. That's just nuts to me to think the ACC has only had two national champions. A little bit of trivia there for you. Now you think about the other side of this thing, and we talk about the Southeastern Conference. We've had a bunch of them. We've had 17 national championships. And it's so ironic, too. We didn't win one as a league until 1990 when Georgia won, the only one they ever won. And then, of course, LSU gets hot, won in 91, 93, 96, 97, 2000, and then 2009. So up until 2010, we had never had a national championship outside of Georgia or LSU. Georgia wins one. LSU has six at that point. Six. And then, of course, Ray Tanner and South Carolina win back-to-back in 2010, 2011. Vandy wins in 2014. Florida, which is weird, right? Considering the recruiting footprint at Florida, Florida has just one national championship, and they won it in 17. Vanderbilt in 19, of course, us in 21, and probably the bigger mystery in all of college baseball, at least as far as SEC teams go, is why hadn't we won more, considering our commitment? We won it in 21. Another school won it in 22. LSU in 23. Tennessee in 24. LSU in 25. So 17 national titles as SEC schools. Now, Texas, of course, now a member of the SEC, had won six, but they were, you know, prior to joining the league. Oklahoma's won a pair of titles before the SEC, and of course Missouri won it way back in 1954. And so all in all, you've had basically half the league has won the national championship, but 17 of those coming as members of the SEC with the SEC logo on the uniform. That's interesting. Would you not agree? That's pretty interesting. And I think when you go back and look a little bit deeper here, as we often like to do on this show, you go back and think about, you know, the Big 12, right? And I think most people would agree that's probably the third best baseball conference, right? I think it's fair. And of course, maybe not so much now that Texas and Oklahoma have left, but it's just interesting to me, you know, that they put a lot of resources into baseball. And, you know, maybe haven't, outside of Texas, maybe not done as well as you think, right? It's just one of those things that it takes a little while, you know, to kind of figure this thing out. You know, it's always so incredibly interesting to me how so many people talk about the SEC and like, hey, the SEC is overrated. But then when you begin to stack up the numbers, it's a different dynamic. Right, I mean, it's just a completely different dynamic when you begin to, you know, to run through that aspect of things. They're not making it easy for me to find this. You can see I'm kind of, you know, baiting for time here, but you know, looking at the, you know, the Division I baseball history here, you know, it's just you got to go back a little ways, right? And we think about how much, you know, the SEC has dominated. Really the last decade, you know, Oregon State, of course, won it back in 18. There, since Coastal won it in 16, there's only been one non-SEC team win the national championship in baseball, and that was Oregon State with Pat Casey back in 18. And that, of course, was Arkansas's to win, and they blew it. A chance to catch the last out in foul ground, and everybody got their camera phones out, and then they let the ball drop. And ultimately lose that game and then the elimination game. But, you know, before that, it was a little more open, I guess you could say. You know, Oregon State, of course, three national championships this century, all under Pat Casey. And ironically, you know, they get North Carolina. But it's so incredible when you begin to think about the best teams in college baseball. You know, programs like North Carolina have been, you know, mainstays in the NCAA tournament. And they've never won the big thing. You know, Florida State, obviously, probably the greatest example of a team with NCAA College World Series experience without ever winning the national title. And I really thought Mike Martin would win it. Back in, I guess it was 19, was 11's last year. If we weren't going to win it, I wanted them to. Because I thought Mike Martin has given so much to college baseball, and Mike made college baseball so incredibly important on that side of the region, right? Mississippi State was kind of doing our thing here, and then Mike Martin over there. And so Florida State and Mississippi State were kind of considered the premier programs this side of the Mississippi. And, of course, Texas and on out to USC, it was a much bigger deal there. But in many ways, I kind of felt like Florida State was a sister school with us because of their commitment to college baseball. But it's just so interesting to think about the ACC, as great as that conference has been. And I think some people in the National College Baseball media are ACC homers, they don't seem to get that there's only been two national champions to come from that league, and now one of the guys, one of the only two coaches to win that NAFL championship is in the SEC. And so this neighborhood only gets more difficult to navigate. Some scheduling news, too. You know, I had somebody tell me that, again, it's not final yet. But I'm hearing, of course, we're going to lose Kentucky and Missouri, but that we will keep South Carolina. We'll go to South Carolina. And not official yet. Of course, they're still kind of figuring some things out. But, you know, which means that we will, you know, we'll pick up probably an Arkansas or a Tennessee or somebody like that as a replacement. But it's not going to mirror, not necessarily. Again, I guess it could always change. But it's not just going to be, okay, now that we've played Texas, we'll go to Texas. I hope we do. Because I'm looking forward to going out there and covering those games. I would love to be able to go out there to Austin and cover those games. I'd love to be able to have Oklahoma come here. I think because they're new, that makes a lot of sense. You know, home and homes the first 2 years. But the rest of it, I think, is still kind of up for grabs. Other than, the permanent opponents, you know, LSU, Ole Miss. That's fine. You know, but the reality of it is they're working through the schedule. I have had somebody tell me nothing's official yet. But I had somebody else tell me that it's pretty much done. It just hasn't been completely signed off on it yet. And some may ask, well, Steve, why are we talking about this now? Well, last year, the Southeastern Conference released the baseball schedule September 13th. So within the next 6 weeks, we'll have an idea of where we're going and when. And we can begin to kind of make some plans, prepare our accommodations and things of that nature. So that's something to know and to understand. There's baseball news all the time nowadays, just like there is in football. And I think the baseball portal and all that stuff is only added to it because just when you get through with the tournament, that kind of carries you all the way up through July. And the next thing you know, you got guys, you get through the draft and you got guys reporting. And so this is really the calm before the storm in many respects because the month of August, guys are reporting, kind of getting in for the 401 workouts and all that stuff of that nature. Then they announce a schedule. We're in the middle of fall ball. And as soon as fall ball ends, you know, the holidays are here. And it just, to me, it seems like that run from post-Thanksgiving to Valentine's Day goes by like that. You know, Christmas, of course, is always here before you know it. I mean, just, you know, put yourself on the clock and figure out how many shopping days are left between now and Christmas. And you'd be like, oh, I got to get going. But once we get through Thanksgiving, you look forward to Christmas, you get out of Christmas, well, then the next thing you know, you're into New Year's, and before you know it, you're less than a month away. We're already into spring training for baseball. And then you open up the season Valentine's Day weekend. And so the older you get, the more time flies. I've learned this from experience. But it's going to be here before we know it, and you'll get your first look at the dogs. And we will have, we haven't finalized it yet, but we will have another scrimmage. You know, we got the Florida State thing. We're playing in Pensacola. There will be a second one in Starkville. That, again, opponent, date, time, none of that's been established, but there will be a second one. So those of you that are going to go to the Blue Wahoo Stadium for Pensacola, we'll have one here. And when we've done it in the past, it's a big deal. I'd like to also kind of invite you guys, too, for those of you that can, you know, that's going to be like your first look at the new dogs at Duty Noble Field. It's going to be many of them's first experience at Duty Noble Field. We need to treat this like a regular season game. We need to turn out and be a part of this and really pack it out. And even though it won't be the same as a regular season game, it's a chance for us, I think, to kind of kick this bad boy off. To kind of like really welcome Brian O'Connor and all the new Bulldogs to town, whether they arrive via the transfer portal or the normal recruiting process. When those dates are announced, we're going to ask you to make plans to be here. And, of course, it's typically like 2-7s. It's like an elongated day. Again, no details yet, nothing finalized. But, again, the expectation is that we will have another scrimmage against a D1 baseball team in Duty Noble Field. And once we get more details, we'll be happy to share them with you then. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. How many times have you dreamed about that? How fun would it be to have all of my college roommates and their significant others back together for us to kind of celebrate and get to know each other a little bit better. Perhaps your family, mom and dad, would love for that. You know, for the brothers and the sisters, the siblings, everybody just kind of plan a weekend together, or perhaps even a midweek trip. Maybe you've got some vacation time you can spend the holiday season. Be kind of cool to do that. We've stayed there for New Year's. It was great. I can tell you the bride loved having all the kids under one roof, as did dad. But the fun thing for me is when my children get together, they have such fun. They enjoy each other. We're very blessed in that respect. There's no beef within our family. We don't have any of that, thank goodness. But it's so great to see my grandchildren have the opportunity to be around us, but also too with their aunts and uncle, and to see everybody just love each other. And we spend a lot of time watching movies and playing games and just kind of eating. One day we cooked, the next day we ordered out, and it was just a great time. We got out around the fire pit area. Your good friend and host got a good fire going, even though there was some moisture in the air. I was a Cub Scout, so I knew what I was doing. But you need to do that for yourself. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can see all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. That's the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 3 baths. Plenty of room for everybody to kind of separate in the evening. You can congregate, have some common areas to kind of visit and just kind of get caught up. Then have your own room. You know, it's not like you're staying in a barracks. You got doors that close and things of that nature. It's the old renovated clubhouse at the old country club out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. Save yourself a lot of time and trouble and effort and get back from the ball game and watch some other ball games and just kind of enjoy a cold one. You know, knock it out. You'll be glad you did. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to pop up. It's Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save a few bucks, book through the Evolve website with promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, the number 10, gets you 10% off your stay. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right. Had a listener message me about the women's basketball schedule. It has not been fully released. We've got a few games that have been out there, but they will get more out there. It's not on the Health State website so far. And so that's an important aspect of this. You know, of course, Sam Purcell signs a contract extension just last month. But of the handful of games that are on the HealthState.com website, there are a few things we know about. Alcorn State will be the opponent November 24th. That's going to be down in Niceville, Florida, the opening game of the Emerald Coast Classic. Should be a game that Mississippi State should win. The Lady Braves went 14-18 last year. That's going to be a 1:30 tip, and again, that's going to be on a Monday. So if you're down there in Niceville, Florida, might be a chance for you to take a three-day weekend and go enjoy that. Now, the next day, we'll play, assuming we win, we'd play the winner of Middle Tennessee State, Providence. Now, you would say, just based on last year's numbers, Middle should win that game. However, it was a senior-laden team last year as the Lady Blue Raiders went 26-9. This year, they're only going to put one senior on the floor. Last year, they had 5 seniors that carried the bulk of the scoring load. Just one senior this year. And so it's going to be a much different team. Providence went 13-19. So you'd think Middle, with Coach Insell there, would probably win the game. But you simply don't know. There's just a lot of unknowns. And so it's really a chance, I believe, Mississippi State to go have some early season success and win a couple of games on a neutral floor. And then the only other game we know at this point is the ACC-SEC Challenge, as the Bulldogs will host Pitt December the 4th. Tip-off time not established or released just yet. The Lady Panthers went 13-19 last year. And so you look at it, you know, the early known games, not going to be a lot of net climbers for us. But the reality of it is a lot to go. And, you know, playing in the SEC kind of takes care of a lot of that stuff. And it's going to be a much different looking team. It's going to be a lot different. You know, we had a lot of players go in the portal. We had a lot of players arrive from the portal. It's going to be a lot different. You're going to obviously return some players that you guys are somewhat familiar with. But it's probably going to take you a little while to kind of figure this thing out, you know. I think it's favor Nwadozie, one of the latest additions out of Nigeria, a 6'3 junior forward. So things will be a little bit different. But the one thing that you notice going through the roster is we're big. Yeah, we've got some bigs. Rasia Jimenez, 6'7", redshirt sophomore out of the Dominican Republic. But we've got some size on this roster. Chandler Prater, of course, returns, as does Destiny McFall. But outside of that, it is largely a different team than what you had last year. So it's going to be Sam Purcell's responsibility to kind of get this group where they need to be. It'll take some time for them to learn each other and for us to learn them. But, you know, that's just kind of how things work, you know, in this day and time. Of course, very talented signing class that came in. And, you know, Purcell, you know, to his credit, it took us back to the tournament last year. You know, we've had some difficulties at times, but, you know, Sam has been more times than not on the women's side. And at times we've got in there and made some racket, you know. Maybe not what we did under Vic Schaefer when we hosted and expected to at least get to the Sweet 16. You know, we had a great run, as you guys are well aware. But it feels like we're building. You know, I think that's the issue, too, when you sometimes think about the new revenue sharing model and all that stuff. There may be somebody out there that's a little more committed to women's basketball than us that's willing to spend a little bit more that may, you know, kind of tip the balance of things. And so it's a little different dynamic than it was when Vic Schaefer was here. And, you know, obviously out of Texas, you know, they've got a ton of money out there. And you know, they feel like they're one player away from winning a national championship and taking care of South Carolina. But, you know, the rivalry between Don Staley and Vic continues, even though he's left Starkville. But, yeah, we've had some great days. We've had some good days. But we're a lot better off than we were, you know, decades ago, when Dave Murray was the in addition to his baseball SID's duties, he had women's basketball, and he used to count the attendance by hand. I guess theoretically you could still do that. It'd be a lot more difficult this go-around. But, yeah, things are different. But, yeah, we'll get more information on that schedule as some contracts get back and the SEC announces some things. But yeah, we've already gone through the non-conference schedule for the men, and I had somebody hit me up and said, hey, do we have any other information? At this point, we don't, and we're not really chasing it. You know, we're not out there filing open records requests for that kind of stuff. It just eventually it's all going to be known anyway. We'd love to be able to break the news, but the reality of it is I don't know how much demand there is for the non-conference schedule for women's basketball these days. That's not a shot. I mean, it's just kind of the reality of it. It's probably a better use of our time and resources than to go chase those sorts of things. But, yeah, so it'll be interesting. You know, we have no idea what we're going to be picked. I mean, we don't know what everybody else has. There's just a lot going on. There's been a lot of changes. Also, Mississippi State women's soccer wins 4-0 over Mercer. Danny P. Smith from the Starkville Daily covered the game. I had to make a run down south, and so wasn't able to cover the game. And he said they played, I guess, three 20-minute periods. I think that's correct, or three 30-minute periods. And it was a different goalkeeper every period. And, of course, State, you know, pitches to shut out and scores four. And Zoe Main, of course, contributes. But, yeah, we're going to have that other exhibition against Louisiana Monroe, and then we'll kind of get into the season and see how things look. But it's going to be a different dynamic, obviously, with so many starters gone. But I'm excited to see this era kind of get going. You know, I think last year we kind of learned that Bulldog fans will turn out. You put a good product on the pitch, we're going to come support you, even if we don't know a lot about the game. We had a lot of people, too, watching women's soccer for the first time ever simply because Mississippi State was playing. We have a lot of fans that just kind of cheer for the logo regardless of sport. And if we're playing for something of significance, they're going to tune in and or show up. So hopefully that will continue. We had a media session with Nick last week, and then, of course, a couple other players. You know, of course, you know, that's just kind of part of it. You know, things never seem to slow down. You know, college athletics coverage has become a 365-day-a-year gig. We're grateful for that. And for most of you that love Mississippi State, you can't get enough Mississippi State news and notes anyway. I went and did that media coverage thing and had several people contact me either on Twitter, social, or message board to thank me for going and covering that. It's just kind of not part of what we're doing, you know. And we support the program and hope that you will as well. I mentioned heading down south. My stepdad's birthday was Saturday. And rather than go to Hattiesburg, he wanted to eat at Cane's in Foxworth, Mississippi. If you know that neck of the woods, you know Cane's. Good southern eating down there. It was very busy. Made the trip down, ate a steak with them, went and visited for a little while, and headed back home. And the thing, you know, as I get older, the more I appreciate my parents, and I understand, I don't know how many years I've got left with them, right? And I don't know how many years I've got left with you either. But it is so important, I think, to make the effort. And for about 20 seconds, maybe, I kind of debated, should I go to the soccer exhibition or should I go to the birthday thing? Well, you know, I said, no, I got to go to the birthday thing. Number one, this is a soccer exhibition. It's not an SEC game. And not to mention, you know, family should come first. And again, my stepfather's had some medical issues the last several years and is on dialysis. And so, you know, that's always something to consider. And not to mention, I've learned that, you know, any time that your mom can see you is a great thing, right? That's, my brother was there too. So we were kind of together there as a family. And we've had some difficulty. You know, my aunt Bobby died recently, my stepdad's sister. And, you know, losing a sibling, I've been very fortunate. I haven't lost any siblings yet. But I spent a lot of time here as of late speaking to my stepfather, just kind of working through some of this stuff, just because of the fact that it makes you consider your own mortality. You know, and there's been, you know, death is a part of life. You know, it truly is. But, you know, I think so much about, you know, what is the legacy that people lead, right? What they leave behind for us, you know. And when I think about my Aunt Bobby, she was a person with a big heart and had a lot of medical problems in really the second half of her life. And, you know, it was just one of those things you just never knew. And she lived longer than I think any of us expected to. But when she passed, it was still very difficult. Even though you're prepared, you're never truly prepared for what life looks like, you know, without them, even if you don't see them. And I think oftentimes we kind of take that for granted. There's so much in the world that's happening today that distracts us from the things that we really care about. And there's so many things that, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, being offended is a privilege. I mean, it truly is. There is a certain amount of privilege that goes with that. And that's the thing that I try to avoid, is not expressing outrage about things that I can't control or things that don't directly impact me. And that may sound a little bit selfish, but that's kind of from recovery, right? I can't make the whole world's problems mine. I can't. And trying to do that will be absolutely exhausting, right? And so rather than worry about all of that stuff, and that's not to say that I don't care, I just don't invest a lot of emotional energy in those things. I would rather spend that time and energy investing in the people that have been so instrumental in me becoming a successful adult. And that's part of the deal. And I would encourage you to do the same. As I share with you guys many times, none of us are guaranteed that bedside vigil, right? None of us are guaranteed that. And my dad had that. And being able to be there with all of my siblings and his wife to be able to tell him that it was okay to go is one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given me. But as I thought about that, in the days after his passing, I thought, man, what a blessing that is on your final day of existence to be able to look around the room at all the faces of the people you love the most and tell them you love them. And the last thing my dad ever said is he said, I love all y'all. What else needed to be said? And my dad wasn't that kind of person. You know, I'm completely different. You know, Dan and I had a discussion last night. We're watching The Big Bang Theory and we watch it a lot. She loves the show. She always jokes, it's our friends. You know, we love, even though we're not nerdy like them, it's still a fun show. But it was the episode when Leonard was going to be like a donor for Penny's ex-boyfriend, Zach, and his wife, you know, so they could have a child or whatever. And she goes, you know, I don't think you could have ever done that. And I said, well, why not? She goes, I don't think you would ever be okay knowing you had a child out there that you weren't a part of their life. And I thought to myself, my wife knows me really well. You know, there are a lot of things in life that I can compartmentalize. I'm the kind of person, too, that I got a lot of relationships behind me. And I'm the kind of person, like, when it's over, it's over. Like, once I give me, like, a week or two, I'm good, right? And obviously there have been some people in my life that have left a lasting impact, and I have good feelings about them, and I hope that they're doing well. But that's one of those things that I think about, you know, about children, you know, about, you know, the life's lessons I have left to teach my own children and in turn my grandchildren. And that was one of the things that I took away from my father's passing. You know, goodness, so coming up on 20 years. You know, and it's tough to think that I've been able to navigate two decades without his leadership and guidance. But I know that he would be proud of me. But I also know that none of us are guaranteed that opportunity to be able to tell people in our final hours that we love them. And so when you begin to think about the possibilities, that is something to consider, to tell people that you love them all the time. And listen, I've got some people, man, that are hard to love. I mean, honest to goodness, I've got some people, like, you may tell them how much you love them and how much they mean to you, and they just don't have the words, you know? I mean, that's what one thing that recovery has taught me, is just to be honest with people about stuff. And so I share that with you because I think it's important. There are some people out there that are dying to hear you tell them that you love them. And it's important not to let people not just die, but not to let people live without you knowing exactly how you feel about them. If you love somebody, tell them and show them. Don't just show them and not tell them, and don't tell them and not show them. It's a twofold act. And I would just encourage you, because life is short and death is certain, let people know you love them. All right, that's going to do it for today. Go to dutynoblebook.com and you can get signed copies of all of my books there, all but one. You get all my sports titles, and is the Brad text. Yeah, but you can get signed copies of Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, of course, and I will be at the Mississippi Book Festival in September. Come out and say hello. And I will be in Carthage this Thursday for the send-off party there. They're trying to get me to go to a couple more. I don't know if we can pull it off. But we'll see. But in addition to that, When the Bottom Falls also available if you're so inclined. And come join us over at jeanspage.com, 50% off the annual subscription price right now. And come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. You'll be glad you did. If you need a mental reset or just a break, we may be able to help you with that. I can tell you, I sleep a whole lot better when I float. And usually about 2 weeks is good for me. If I get over 2 weeks, I get a little bit cranky. And my wife's like, you need to come float. And so it may be a situation, too, where it could help you. Whether you've got chronic pain or anxiety, it may give you some relief. Dial 662-268-7601. Be sure and check it out on social media, True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Or to go to the home site, truerest.com. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.